It's time for your Sunrise Guys.
I'm not arguing that our package is the best, although I think we do have a very strong package to offer.
Dirt and Sprague.
We have the best package.
Wait time I get excited.
Andy Dirt Johnson. Brandon Sprague.
I'm not fourth fiddle. I want to be number one.
It works.
Dirt and Sprague.
When you're about to get freaky at night, you think about it.
On the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number two, Dirt and Sprague here on Portland Sports Leader 105.1, The Fan and the Fan Sports Network. 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, YouTube. Good morning. Hello. Hope your weekend was great. Dirt's back on the saddle, cocky sniffing in his Colt gear.
It's Trump time.
Trump's rooting for Oregon?
I don't know. I just played a random drop, but we're back, baby. Superpower in baseball now.
So here we come. Some of that slush fund for the J6 stuff? Is that what you're playing?
Evidently, we could use it in our basketball program. Everybody transfers out of that team. Can we get some NIL funding? We got any J6ers out there?
Half of your roster is from, it's like a totally new roster in baseball from last year. Your roster.
Take your word for it.
No, that's,
Milwaukee's a stud. That's all I know, man.
God,
that's
all
we got.
You are the worst.
Or Samoa Tani. It's just gonna
your whole
dominate.
Attitude about this thing doesn't change if they win or lose. It's the same approach.
Yeah, it's got to be pretty frustrating. Can anybody explain to me why we have to be a road team in our own regional?
You know, actually, I've always wondered this, too.
What's the point of playing an entire season and getting home field advantage and then having to be a road team in a regional? Swag's eating something. You're going to come up with an explanation, and I guarantee you it's not going to make any sense.
Well, you know you're not truly the road team. It's just, why are you at the
top
of the inning versus the bottom?
Well, you're literally the road. I mean, you're not playing on the road, but you don't have the chance to have the last at bat. That's the whole point of playing
at home. For the regionals.
Yeah.
The designated home team in any game from the NCAA is the team that has been the home team the least amount of times between the two in the regional.
That's stupid. We should be the home team in every game we play.
Well, it's called the Eugene Regional, not the Duck Regional.
It's so stupid.
That's the little thing that they roll out.
Why? Why is that necessary?
Now, if I'm wrong here.
Yeah. If you want to be a home team, then host a regional.
Didn't they technically call the Oregon James Madison playoff game like... They didn't call it something, right? Like
they did not call it a neutral site game. I don't think so. I don't think they went that far, did they?
No, but I feel like they acted like it wasn't a home game in terms of how they dressed it up.
There might have been some of that, like the banners that they hung or whatever.
Like when the NCAA tournament comes to, they couldn't have all the, there was some confusion about all of the normal like stuff they play on the video board in between quarters and all the hype stuff.
Yeah, that stuff.
They
stupid.
Had to limit it in some fashion.
Look, your answer is not wrong. I know that you're right and why.
Yes.
Just acknowledge it's stupid.
Dumb. Yeah, it's dumb.
It's stupid.
I'll give you that.
What's the point of hosting a regional and not being the home team in every game of the regional?
I don't disagree with you.
UCLA, as shocking as their loss was, to be wire-to-wire number one, basically not lose a game all year, and then get bounced in the regional by St. Mary's.
St. Mary's. How about the Fighting Daphnes?
Them getting walked off. They won 50 games this year and didn't even have the chance to have the last at-bat in their last game. What's the point?
Well, they were in the loser's bracket.
They should be the home team in every game that they play. This is absolute lunacy.
Also,
your sport is stupid.
Don't lose to St. Mary's.
I get it. That's besides the point. You should never have the ability to be walked off on your own field in some sort of postseason after winning 50 games in college baseball.
It is disgusting.
That is ludicrous.
That you are a WCC honk for everything. You don't call baseball games.
Right.
Why are you honking it up?
I don't know.
It's just an instinct at this point.
It's just an instinct.
It's a reflex.
Yeah, it's a reflex. Well, congratulations to your Ducks. Good luck at Texas.
We're going to go dominate the dojo, baby.
Get ready to learn Austin.
We're ready. I'm eating your barbecue and listening to your crappy music.
Any Duck fans going to Austin?
I'd imagine there's a few that'll go down.
You're going to go on a
trip. Of all the places you could go, Austin's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Even if my team loses, at least I get some barbecue out of it.
At least you're in Austin. You get to hang out, go to a couple of bars, and hear some music and eat some food.
So Oregon beats Oregon State. First time they've ever met in NCAA tournament history, and Oregon State lost 4-1, fell short, and they walked themselves out of that regional.
At least that guy committing all those walks had a great head of hair.
Yeah, he did.
That guy was...
Well, it was kind of started by the guy before him.
Oh, it was, for sure. He
and
came in with the bases loaded.
The big flowing ball.
He even had the first ball to the next guy, too.
He was supposed to be their
closer.
They're
like, get him out of here. This guy's got nothing.
I feel really awful, dude. I came in here, and I know this is a big deal, and it's funny, but like also, I don't even know what his name is. Big Mullet Guy.
Big Mullet Guy.
And I know
Robles.
Right.
That's his last name.
Robles.
He had a great head of hair.
Yeah, he did.
That's all. They brought him in. There was a brief moment of like, this guy looks like he needs
like,
business.
Hey, is that Rod Beck's son?
Looks like a Rod Beck knockoff right there. And then he threw ball 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And it was 3-1.
Anybody get really confused by that strike zone?
Yeah, he had some pretty
for
bad
both teams. I thought there were some horrific.
I also
strike
didn't.
Calls.
The tough part about PK Park is
the center field cam is so off center from dead on to the plate. The angles are.
Okay, so maybe I'm blaming the wrong person then. I thought there were some really bad
calls. He punched out a beef late in the game, but it was a weird, like, strike three was definitely a ball, but there was also a pitch that he called a ball that looked like it should have been a strike.
There were a lot of pitches that looked like they were way inside that were actually on the black.
See, I saw outside framing to in, and it felt like he got fooled by framing.
What was the logic on the overturn call at home, too? Don't you have to give the guy room to slide? I didn't quite understand that
one. He blocked the plate. Yeah.
I didn't fully get that one, but, you know, to each their own.
But Oregon is advanced. They're going to the Super Regional against Texas, and now Oregon State fan is yelling at each other.
I put out a very tongue-in-cheek, jokey tweet last night. Beaver fans did not take it very well.
That was too soon.
Not understanding it was a joke. Like, calm down, all right?
You kind of deserve to gloat. That's the point of the rivalry.
Yeah,
I
jokingly said we're a blue blood now, and there's a lot of people who don't know who I am, nor listen to the show, who jumped into that very offended. Very offended.
Get a life, you dweebs.
Get off of the internet.
That's the Civil War, dude.
Yeah.
You gotta talk crap.
I will
one
say
way
this.
Or the other.
I didn't care really that much either way. Like, it doesn't impact me if they win or lose that much. Winning a championship will be cool, but whatever.
You
right?
didn't dress like that opinion.
I just did that, and again, Joe, I knew this was going to rile people up if I wore this all today.
I don't really care, says the guy in head-to-toe gear.
Well, look, my baseball team's still playing, so I figured I'd support them on their way to the Super Regionals as you guys head to an off-season in your independent schedule.
We're going to the Pac-12 next year.
Oh, that's right, you're going back to the conference. Damn it, I forgot what I was going to say.
Good,
let's move
on to Game 7.
Sidetracked again.
I know all the names in Game 7.
No, I know what I was going to say. Oh. It was fun to have, at least for a brief moment, although it was not the end-all, be-all for it was fun to have a little juice on the rivalry.
That's what I was saying.
Like, just
Friday.
Going into the weekend, and then there was the thought of like, God, what if Oregon State loses to Washington State? We don't even end up playing.
That would be dumb.
And then there was the, oh my God, if they win and then get a winner take all game,
it would have been today.
Yeah. We had a build up, so that was kind of a bummer. We didn't get that, but that was like we had the group chat going. Ducks and Beavers are yelling at each other. It was fun to have a little juice on the rivalry.
Well, no matter what, Oregon State might not feel good. They might feel down. They lost to their rival. Their season is over. They still weren't a bigger bitch than Chet Holmgren, I'll tell you that much.
You had a better weekend than Chet Holmgren.
Wow.
Yeah. That was fun to watch.
So the Spurs win 111-103. They win Game 7 in Oklahoma City. There was no J-Dub in this game, no A.J. Mitchell.
Nope.
Obviously, you saw Jalen Williams in Game 6. Mm-hmm. He clearly could not get it going. And then A.J. Mitchell has a calf strain, and if calf strains are serious, you're not going to even toy with the idea of
it. That's a popped Achilles, and you're out all of next year.
Exactly. And so the Spurs come into this one, and really, they did this all series, but they really, in a Game 7, you're like, what is the young team? How are they going to feel in a Game 7? At least Oklahoma City was in a Game 7 last year in the finals. Like, it can't get bigger than that. Didn't matter at all.
Nope.
32-25, dominated the first quarter. And all seven players, well, they had seven players in double digits. Carter Bryant ended up with two. He played just 3 minutes. Luke Kornet, who had
the block of the century. That was like a LeBron James block.
It's not the block of the century, but it's a good block.
For Luke Kornet, that felt like a block of the century. His fat white ass chasing him down. That was a hell of a play.
That play made me forgive him for ruining Magic City Night. I'll tell you that much.
He was the guy that ruined Magic City Night?
Remember, he's the one that wrote the blog.
I knew a lot of... Oh, he was the one?
He's the church writer.
Wasn't it Al Horford? Didn't Al Horford have something to do with that, too?
It's Luke Kornet. Luke Kornet blogs, and he goes to a church in every city he goes to, and he basically is like, this is beneath the NBA. We should respect our young viewers, and so they had to cancel Magic City Night. So
take every good thing back, I say.
Well, the block was
a
pretty damn good play. Castle had 16. Fox was pretty good in this game, I thought. I know he had 15 points on 12 shots, but he looked like he was able to move around like himself.
Yeah.
So definitely took a shot of some sort to numb that, because he didn't look like that at all in Game 6. Or in Game 5.
Game 5,
is what I'm thinking. And then Wemby finished with 22. And Champagne was pretty electric from three. He finished with 20.
It was funny to see that tweet go viral of when the 76ers just cut him for nothing.
You know when they cut him?
Like 3 years ago.
Want a fun
from
fact?
Mac McClung, that's right.
They cut him to let Mac McClung wear their jersey in the dunk contest. Not even because they wanted him as an everyday player.
They just wanted a dunk contest winner.
the 76ers cut Julian Champagne, who had 6 threes in a game 7 on the road.
He had 20 points. It was their second leading scorer in game 7.
To have a guy
in the conference finals
wear their jersey in a dunk contest. On the other side of it, it was quite literally SGA and Cason Wallace.
Yeah, nothing else.
And Jalen Williams was good. I actually thought Jalen Williams played well in the series. Mm-hmm. He finished with 11 and 10. Caruso was pretty horrific in this one. He was 3 of 14, 1 of 6 from 3. McCain couldn't get it going at all. Lu Dort didn't have a good series whatsoever.
No.
Hartenstein was not good. And Chet Holmgren is kind of the takeaway for OKC. He was abysmal. Like, 2 shot attempts in 33 minutes for an all-NBA guy.
Yep.
There's almost a separate conversation of that. But Game 7, Spurs win. They're going to the finals.
I mean, look, it was the we could get into the nuts and bolts of it. It was the perfect outcome for the NBA. The perfect outcome. You have this unicorn attraction that everybody is in awe of watching, who now has the ability to go play in Madison Square Garden at the age of 22 in the NBA Finals.
They couldn't dream up anything better than this.
This is literally perfect. There's nobody else in the East that was that compelling. Cleveland getting there, Detroit getting, like, it just, whatever. We are tired and we don't like teams winning back-to-back titles, so the Thunder get it, all right, whatever. Now they're done, and now we get San Antonio, and maybe they become the team that bucks the trend. But to now have a record consecutive 8th straight year of a new team winning the championship is great for the league. It showcases how difficult it is to build a perennial powerhouse. It's also now, I think I saw this, that now 8 different teams have been represented in the last 4 NBA Finals. That's never happened in league history. Nobody's even gone back. It was Nuggets versus Heat, Celtics versus Mavs, Thunder versus Pacers, and now Spurs versus Knicks. In the last 4 years, you've had 8 different teams play in the NBA Finals. That's never happened in the history of the league. So it's not just one conference. Mm. We don't have the LeBron James in 8 straight, no matter what team he's playing for, or a Kevin Durant dynasty. It's phenomenal for the league, and I think this will be the highest-rated NBA Finals that we have seen probably since 2016, Cavs and Warriors.
Do you think this one's going to reach people?
I don't think it'll reach that level, but I think it'll be the highest rated since then. And it's not like every year's been down or every, you know, finals is bad. I just think there's some Madison Square Garden combined with Wemby. The Western Conference Finals ratings were through the roof, and I don't think the Thunder are certainly compelling and they're fun to watch, and they have an MVP on their team.
Yeah,
but the people are tuning in to see something that they've never seen before, and that's what Victor Wembanyama is. It's the equivalent in baseball of getting a Shohei Ohtani in the World Series, because he's the face of your league. And Victor Wembanyama, whether you like it or not,
he's the face.
Or you think a French guy or an American can or can't do it, he is going to be the face of the NBA. He is the most dominant player in the NBA. The series started with him sitting on the bench in one of those Michael Jordan moments, watching SGA get an MVP that he openly campaigned for in the back half of the year, and then SGA, with the game on the line, driving into the paint and not even attempting to get a shot off against him, and just basically flailing and almost turning the ball over, because that's how scared he is. He is the biggest presence. He's the best player in the league when you combine everything, and him going to the finals. I mean, it could not have set up better for the entire NBA.
I'm with you 100%. It's also terrifying they were able to do this.
It is. I'm going to lean on the Thunder not doing it, and what you always say is that nothing is ever guaranteed, right? If you would have the Thunder from an analytical standpoint, people said all year one of the 3 best teams in the history of the NBA, and they just lost in game 7 on their own floor.
Well, so
because a couple injuries happened,
but that's
their depth
a big thing.
Wasn't quite. I mean, but this is the whole point. Like, you don't know who's going to be healthy.
Yeah,
you're now. I think the Spurs are going to be in. I'm going to pick them to win the series, but I think it'll be a lengthy. Knicks will give them some trouble, and we'll go 6 maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to be a sweep. You're playing all these extra games. Your offseason is truncated. You're jumping right back into it next year. These guys have international responsibility. Like, it's just hard to stay healthy and available for that many basketball games over that stretch of time.
The craziest thing, I think, is Game 7, because it was one of those, like, the Spurs took a hold in the first quarter, and they never really
gave it up, right? Yeah.
Like, the Thunder came back in. They crept into it. It was a good game. You're like, all right, here we go. And they kind of just, I don't know. I never felt like San Antonio was in overall jeopardy, but you're like, man, maybe Oklahoma City can steal this. They couldn't get anything outside of SGA.
Nothing. He was fantastic.
He was. He only had one play where I was like, dude, he flopped one time. Other than that, I thought he was great.
Yeah.
He had 35 points for him and 9 assists. Chet not giving you anything. You had no AJ Mitchell. You had no J-Dub. And you lost by 8.
Yes.
I think that, like I want to highlight that. Like, the Spurs are clearly the story here. It's a bunch of 22-year-olds
right.
with, oh, let's throw in a little De'Aaron Fox into it.
A team, by the way, that was 43% from three, San Antonio was in Game 7.
Yeah, I mean, they were 61% in the fourth quarter from the field.
They
Kelvin Johnson was awesome for them in the fourth quarter.
Right.
I think the Spurs are the story, but it should just be highlighted today as one team is dead and they're the defending champions. You know, it's going to end now. It's going to be funny the takeaway narratives we have. They lost by 8, and they had literally one guy doing anything.
Yes.
They had two key offensive contributors out to injury and an all-NBA guy who just mentally got cooked in this series.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the thing for me is, like, the idea of, you know, oh, here goes the dynasty, and we've been saying this over and over, and it's going to be 8 straight years of a new champion. How many years did you say it's 2 new teams? It's
4. This is the fourth straight year. There's been 8 different teams make the NBA Finals. That's never happened in the history of the league.
We cannot overemphasize how much skill and talent and parity in that league there is, to the point where I understand why a take today would exist of, oh God, here we go. It's their league now. Yeah. To your point, let's see how it goes next year. Are they going to have injury luck? Don't forget, Wemby missed a majority of the season last year.
Yes, he missed. He almost didn't get the games played required this year.
It's a phenomenal story, but I think to your point, like I don't have a grandiose takeaway of, oh, it's their league now. Let's just sit back and watch. It's like, you just don't know how it's going to go. Teams are going to make trades. We'll get into some of that stuff today. But a phenomenal performance for them to do this at the age. And I think that's just the place that I and maybe other people whiffed on, is I thought they could be in the Western Conference Finals this year. I believed in them that much. But I picked them to lose in 5 in this series, because I just thought in key moments the age would matter. And I'm watching this Game 7. My daughter's rooting for Oklahoma City because she loves SGA. I'm calling Chet a bitch. She's trying to defend him. The game ends. She's looking at the box score. She's like, I can't even defend you anymore.
Right.
And I'm like, I know. You can't play like that.
Nope.
I was most jarred. Like, Dylan Harper is hitting step-back threes.
Yeah. It's an effing rookie. Late in the fourth quarter as a 20-year-old.
Stephon Castle, like, I
How did Rutgers not make the tournament last year? How is that? I know they had nothing else on that roster. How is it not possible that they got like a 12 seed?
Because he probably didn't really care. What did he care for?
That was a takeaway for me this weekend of like, dude, you had 2 lottery picks. That guy's one of the best young players I've ever seen in the NBA.
I would have thought that would have bit them, especially against a defending champion. Now, the injuries, I thought, ultimately told the story of the series.
It was huge, man.
But still, to go onto a road in Game 7,
right,
shorthanded or not, like,
and to be in total control of the moment.
I thought those young players, some of them would get a little like, oh man, this feels different. And they reversed it on him. Chet Holmgren was like, I don't want to play basketball.
He looked like a little bitch the entire night.
They had to bench him.
Yep.
I'm stunned by that part of it, I think, is just watching guys that young operate as if that was Game 54 and not Game 7 of the West Finals.
I think the stuff about the future of San Antonio, one, the irony of it is we don't even know if they're going to win the finals or not, right? Like, I thought OKC was going to run Indiana out of town last year, and it went to Game 7, and if Halliburton stays healthy, maybe they win the series. So we're already going to crown them before the series even begins, and let's not try and do that. I think the fear comes in with them long-term is there's never quite been a player that I've seen impact the game in so many different ways like Wemby. Like, we've had generational scorers or generational shooters or dominant defenders, and he's not the best offensive player in the league by a wide margin. We understand that. It's just like late in the game, there was a moment, and I pointed it out earlier, like SGA driving to the hoop, having a tremendous night, carrying them offensively all game on the line, Game 7. And what is SGA mostly known for, right? Like, making some sort of contact, bumping into somebody, creating a foul, let's get to the line. And he turtled. Like, he drove to the paint, Wemby's in his vicinity, and he just panicked and nearly, seeing somebody have that kind of impact on MVP players in the league is what is so jarring about them. And then you add in how young they are. To Harper's point on how good he was, 84 points in the series, that is the most by a player age 20 or younger in a conference final since Magic Johnson at 87 against the Sonics in 1980.
Dude, look, that's
like that you are now
right
in
there.
The
that's
conversation
crazy.
Of a cop, like being that young and God. Performing at that high of a level this early in your career. That's only ever happened from Magic Johnson in 1980.
I want to carry this over. The finals matchup now is the Knicks and the Spurs. That won't start until Wednesday. We'll probably do a preview from both cities as we get ready for that one. I'm pretty excited about it.
Dude, we get the logos back on the floor.
The logos are back on
officially,
the floor.
They've already painted the floors. Let's go.
Game 3 MSG is like, oh, yeah. Bucket list.
Yep.
I would love to be there and just be a fly on the wall who's becoming a Knicks fan because Timothée Chalamet slapped my hand.
Never watching this hand again. Never again.
But we'll talk about the finals. Who do you like in it? Do you think this is a Spurs runaway series? Got some more on what Game 7 was as well on something Dirt said. I'll tell you what that is next on The Fan. All right, we'll go back in. Talking about Game 7 and Wimby. The Spurs, I don't believe, will be breaking the Blazer record of youngest team to win an NBA championship.
The second youngest, though, if they win, right?
Well, so I'm looking at...
Because they were slightly older than Portland, just by a hair from 77.
So the 77 team was about 24 and some change years old.
Right.
It's still the youngest. The Warriors were close. They were 25.1 years old. I'm looking at a website that has the age... And the Spurs are kind of down there. They're at 26.
Oh, okay.
So they won't break the record. The Portland Trailblazers in 77 were 24 and a half years old on an average basis.
We still got that going for us, baby.
We're still the champs.
Can't
of that
take that away from us, San Antonio.
But I think the thing about them is, on the Wimby note you mentioned of SGA kind of turtling or going away, you know, you can look at a stat line. I can read you his stat line, and it was 22 points. Okay, 22 points, 7 boards, 2 assists, 1 block.
Yeah, that's good. It's a good stat line, but
one offensive rebound, by the way.
Right, doesn't jump off the page.
It doesn't jump off the page, but here's what's fascinating to me. He is, in a weird way, he's creating almost a stat of some sort that doesn't...
Passed up shots. Whatever you want to call it.
I mean, how many games and how many times during the series... Did you watch anybody on Oklahoma City, as soon as he got in the paint, turn, kick, or even attempt to go at him?
Chet Holmgren forgot how to dribble. Can we add that into the stat category?
I want to talk about him.
Wimby made him forget how to dribble.
But, like, that's not a stat that's going to be on a box score. Now, advanced analytics can certainly show you certain elements of Wimby's impact.
In the paint, field goal percentage around the hoop.
I mean, I don't even need advanced analytics for this dude. I'm just... pointing out what the obvious is that we're all watching it. Like, anybody and everybody sees him, and this is what's going to be fascinating about the series. I'm actually super stoked on this, and I was more excited until I woke up and I saw that the masses are asses and they're following me and betting the Knicks.
I know. The odds were shorter than I thought. I was disappointed in that.
I'm taking the Knicks in 7, and I'm going to stay with it because I felt that way, but...
Don't bet them to win the series. Wait and see. If they lose game one of the series, then you'll get better odds. That's what you need. You need San Antonio to win, and then you get better odds to bet on them.
But I don't like that everybody's kind of following me there. Yeah. But the thing is, like, he has stats that aren't even stats. And I think that's the tough part. I'm with you of, like, his game 7 was good. He didn't have the play. Cornette did. He got the help from everybody else. But, like, his just existence in itself is just crazy. Right. And we don't give it, I think, enough credit because it doesn't register on the stat sheet.
No, I mean, I would say it registered, and it's not the entire reason, but Oklahoma City only scoring 103 points, which is low for modern NBA standards in a game 7, shooting 34% from 3. Like, the defensive impact and their ability to be elite on that end of the floor when it matters most is how he impacts the game the most. And he's the most impactful player in the NBA, I think, just because of his ability to do it on both ends. He's the first guy out of this series in NBA history to have 15 threes made and 15 blocks in one playoff series. Nobody's ever done that in the history of the NBA. He had moments where he was dominant offensively. He had moments where he wasn't great. But you always feel him when he's on the floor. And that's not the case for all the other elite players in the NBA, especially on both ends. And I think the wow factor is simply watching guys who are at the best of their craft. Like, this is why I brought up the SGA play, because he was outstanding in Game 7. He just won a second consecutive MVP. He is the reigning finals MVP and NBA champion. And you don't see a lot of guys have the ability to get into the head of a player like SGA and make them dictate or change the way that they're playing and operating on the floor.
So you thought he got in his head, whereas I'm just like, this is kind of how they've all operated the whole series.
I get it. I just am saying, like, it's just wild to see a guy who's known for getting to the paint and going, creating contact, mid-range jump shots, and getting to the foul line in the biggest moment of the game say, nope. Not even going to try.
Because you can't do it. I think that's the tough part.
There's nothing that you can do in that moment.
He doesn't commit a lot of dumb fouls. Like, that's going to be... Here's an early peekaboo thing. He is really good. I know he got into 5 fouls in Game 7. I thought they should have attacked him when he came back out. He doesn't commit a lot of dumb fouls.
No.
You can't really fool him much. Whereas the guy going against him, not him per se, because I think they put OG Anunoby on him, but, like, the fellow big on the other team... Man, Karl-Anthony Towns can foul out quick.
Very quickly.
He commits stupid fouls.
Yep.
So it's, to me, there's going to be a lot in that series. Like, you're going to need certain players to be far more disciplined than they are. Now, we talk about the impact of Wemby and them going on the road, and, like, it's clearly the story here. The other big takeaway is, like, Chet Holmgren... I don't know what happened.
It was
there.
A LeBron James, JJ Barea moment.
You know,
to be
it
honest.
Was
like, how is this happening right now?
There's no doubt about it. It's interesting to listen back to Dallas Mavericks in that series of what they did. And I know we classified as JJ Barea. We should. And he played horrifically. I remember watching that series in the moment being frustrated, but I was more upset by Chet because with LeBron, I'm like, I've seen enough evidence to know that this guy's going to probably be okay.
You've already single-handedly carried a team to an NBA Finals.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this was a moment for Chet. They won the title last year. Here you go. You got Game 7 on your court. This guy has punked you since you were a teenager. Are you going to show up? You haven't showed up largely the whole series. To shoot twice in 33 minutes and to pass up how many shots from three, he couldn't catch passes.
No, he couldn't dribble. He literally couldn't play.
He could not play basketball. He got literally broken down to the point of... He looked like the Monstar stole his powers, and he didn't know what he was doing.
It was a Ben Simmons Game 7 of
it,
like,
really,
oh,
was.
My God, what just happened?
Daigneault had to bench him late in the fourth when that game got tight because he wasn't going to get anything from him.
Supposed to be your second-best player.
And Presti's not going to overreact the way the media is going to overreact today, but I'm saying, man, like, I feel like I'm taking a victory lap in one way of, like, last year I got in an argument with Swag about the Thunder not making moves, or 2 years ago. And he thought they should make a move. And I'm like, no, let the young guys ride it out. And they lost. And then they ended up winning the title.
See what you got.
I had the same takeaway with the Spurs. Like, why would you dive into Giannis? Your team's young. You're all 20. See what it is. They might win the championship.
Very well could.
Teams are going to be far more patient in this era. That being said, dude, like, you play like that when I need you as an all-NBA guy and a second runner-up to Depoy?
Yeah.
4 points on 2 shots. If they consider doing something drastic in that regard, I wouldn't blame them, man. That I would be irate if I was SGA, if I was Sam Presti. That is not a performance of a third-team All-NBA guy.
I saw a lot of Blazer fans making the joke this weekend after that game of, like, Wemby not – or not Wemby. Denny not third-team All-NBA, but Chet Holmgren is. And I understand it in the aftermath of that game. I also – you're looking at a guy who was second in Defensive Player of the Year vote. He's very good on that end of the floor. The main concern here, and this is why I brought it up, because, you know, when Ben Simmons did this, it was almost viewed as the end of his career. Like, when he had that Game 7 against Atlanta, it was like, oh my God, this guy's broken, and I don't know if you could ever fix him. Ben Simmons, in that Game 7 against Atlanta, attempted 4 field goals.
Double.
Chet attempted 2 in a Game 7 on his own floor.
And at least, you know, at least the only thing Chet has is, I have a title. That's the only
he's
thing
got
he has
one
time
right. He was
on right
able
now.
To get over the hump last year, and he's been very good defensively. We know that. There are just concerns and questions about where is his offensive game going to go.
Did you feel like he was good defensively in this series?
No.
I didn't feel like I felt the impact.
No, it's a I mean, look, the Wemby thing is a horrible matchup for every big. Like,
but
we'll
he
see.
Doesn't guard Wemby.
But he doesn't guard. I know. And then so you got to find a way to have an impact elsewhere, because Hartenstein had a much bigger impact on Wemby when he was in the game than Chet did, just because he's too scrawny and skinny, and there's nothing he could do there. It's shocking to see a player who I don't like because he annoys me. I don't like the way he looks, and I can't stand his AT&T commercials, and he's a Gonzaga guy. Like, I can't. I want nothing to do with Chet Holmgren.
Yeah.
But I also acknowledge that he's a good player and how talented and capable he is. To see a guy get emasculated to that level by another NBA player is shocking. It's one thing to see a guy just outperform and, like, Wemby outplayed him in the series. That's fine. Wemby's a better player. I just, it was jarring to see how he had zero confidence to do the most basic routine things on an NBA floor. There was a possession where they passed it to him and he was standing on the three-point line. Wemby closes out. He's, I don't know, 5 feet away from him. Chet takes one look at Wemby, does a little bit of a jab step, and just goes, nope, passes the ball right back to where it came from. Nobody else can generate anything offensively. They give the ball back to Chet, and now there's like 7 seconds left on the shot clock. We need you to do something. And he just dribbles it off of his foot and turns it over and falls down to the ground. Like, it just... to see a guy that is that good of a player look that shell-shocked by who they're going against was absolutely wild. And I think if you're Oklahoma City, you got the title, you have unlimited assets at your disposal still.
If you want to make a move,
yeah. And you have his max contract extension kicking in next year. And you could be a good defensive player. I'm not going to kill him on that end of the floor for one bad series, although I'm with you. He didn't have that big of an impact. Where is this offensive game going? Can we create our own shot? Are you ever going to be reliable?
He only averaged 17 on the year.
And that's not terrible, but is there a higher ceiling there for your size and ability? You're not Wemby, but you're a seven-footer that can dribble. It just, you're asking a lot of really hard questions right now in OKC because that's how shocking that performance was.
Give an anti-Portland hot take as I quickly follow up there. Any Blazer fan calling it out of all NBA stuff? Like, okay, cool. Way to jump on. Where were you game 3 of the Spurs-Blazers series? Because Denny was 3 of 15. He was god-awful, and Dylan Harper outplayed him.
And who didn't play in game 3 of the series?
Yeah, exactly.
Victor Wembanyama, the guy who was protecting the rim.
Chill it with, he didn't play in a big game. Denny should have been all-NBA. Yeah, where was Denny game 3? He was terrible in that game. But that being said, I think this is the interesting part for that team because they only lost by 8. They were missing 2 key contributing offensive players, and they are right there. This is the part of contending that's fascinating. Bob Whitsitt in the doc was basically like, you should never stop tinkering. Now, did he overdo it? Yeah, certainly he did.
Ruben Patterson did nothing wrong.
Exactly.
What?
But there are ways, because their tax is going to hit. Swag, the league calendar starts July 1st, correct?
I believe so. It's right after the draft.
So right now they're not in the tax.
By July 1st,
second,
they will be.
The second tax apron thing. But I think after July 1st they will because of those extensions.
His doesn't kick in until next year, yeah.
Well, and all I hear about is how flush they are with cash in OKC because it's not really Clay Bennett's money. Are they going to pay that luxury tax? That bill is going to be fat.
They have picks 12 and 17 in the first round this year.
Right. So I think what's interesting to evaluate from the Oklahoma City standpoint.
God, that's so stupid.
They have 2 picks that didn't even play. Topic didn't play, and
no.
I forgot who they picked last year. He didn't play.
Not even in the lineup.
So like they have assets, right? To me, what's interesting, Dirt, is does Presti, who is not going to overreact, does he tinker, though, and say, I can move this guy? Because you can say what you want. I'm with you. What is the offensive ceiling of that dude? I don't feel like he scares me.
No.
He's a good defensive player when he's not going up against Wemby.
Yes.
The problem is...
Wemby's going to be in your way for a while.
And I would assume that. So you can't play like that.
No.
That's all-time legacy-defining stuff for a guy who doesn't lead a team to a title. And that's what the Thunder have to evaluate is they barely lose game 7, but they lose it nonetheless.
When you got a great game from your number one player, too. That's what makes it hurt so much.
Like
you were banged up, and you could say we only lost by 8. All of that is true, and I don't know if they rocked the boat this offseason or not. SGA showed up and was unbelievable on Saturday night.
What did he play, 44 of the 48?
He played the entire game. He was efficient. It wasn't 19 free throws that he made, right? He was like 9 of 10, so it's still a decent amount. It's the idea of can he overcome this against Wemby?
But
like that's the problem.
Wemby has done this to him since they played in the world, the World Cup Juniors
when
or
they
whatever
were kids.
It was.
Like it's been forever.
Wemby hates him.
Right.
Like legitimately.
Well, that
I
was another highlight
him.
That went out of Chet and USA beat France in one of those kid tournaments. I can't remember which one it was. And there's video of Wemby walking around the court crying, watching Chet get the trophy. It's like this is personal for him.
It always has.
And
been.
It's one thing to have a bad playoff series. Yeah. They are going to happen. But if you can't get over this mental hurdle with Wemby, I want nothing to do with you. Because San Antonio might not win 5 straight titles, but they're not going anywhere as a competing team in the Western Conference.
Yes.
And if you're going to play that way against them, we don't have a great shot at beating them.
Would you trade him?
Yes, if I were OKC, I would.
Man, what the hell did they get for him? What is the price tag for Chet Holmgren?
Is that the Giannis deal? Do you do the Giannis move now?
That doesn't feel like the move.
Yeah.
I don't know what the move is. That doesn't feel like the move.
Yeah, I'm with you. There's rumors they want to compile some stuff to move up into the draft, into the top 5 to get a certain guy.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Who's in the top 5 that would want Chet and picks?
Let's go back and look.
Who your picks? Your picks are
12 and 17.
No. But who? Well, I'd want some of the Clippers stuff too.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, you got two to play with this year, plus the Clippers picks, plus a Chet.
So it's DC. It's Utah. Who's the third pick?
Chicago.
No, Chicago's four.
Chicago's four.
Who's three?
Who's three?
And then five.
Utah.
Utah's two.
Two.
Because they're getting to Bonsa.
Yes. Washington one.
Washington's one.
Yes. Memphis.
Memphis.
That's right.
And then whoever Memphis the hell five is. Like, is there any of those
Clippers are five. Clippers Ooh. Is your shot.
Yeah. Pair.
The Clippers getting their picks Chet. Back and getting Chet to pair with Kawhi.
They're doing the Blazer Giannis deal. Hey, you want your stuff back?
You want your stuff back?
We've been holding on to your stuff for a while. You want your stuff? You can have your stuff.
A couple more thoughts. We got an NBA Finals matchup. We'll dive into that as the week goes on. Game one is Wednesday. But a couple more thoughts that I want to get to next on The Fan. All right, we roll on. We have a lot more to get into. Delightful little Monday morning. Happy June 1st, everybody. It's graduation season. Hope you got your good grades in there, or your good letters, depending on what you know, tremendous, outstanding.
Get your diplomas, kids.
Exceptional. I don't know which one I'd rather have as a grade. I'm not one that, like, wants to always overreact, but I was going full first take watching that game. I'm like, you bitch. You're being a bitch.
Yeah.
The whole game. I'm like, do something. They need you to do something.
You got other guys banged up. SGA's playing great. You're supposed to be the second best player on the floor, and you were a net negative in the biggest game of the season.
Huge net negative. Now, on this, so the Spurs and the Knicks are going to get it going, and mm-hmm. I'm super excited about it. I don't want to blow the load before game one on Wednesday, but I want to ask you a side note question.
Sure. Am I excited that this is a cup final rematch, the first time in NBA history?
Maybe the regular season matchups do matter because they dominated the Thunder. They ended up winning the series.
I'm surprised you haven't brought that up yet as a cup boy over there. I figured you would have argued that one already. Somebody tweeted
that. Well, the Knicks repeat.
The first time in the historic run of the NBA Cup, we have a finals rematch of the NBA Cup, man.
It was actually a good game.
I actually totally forgot that they were the teams that played in it, but I'll take your word for it.
I went into it thinking the Spurs were going to win the Cup easily, and the Knicks actually played them really well. They killed them,
They beat them by like 20-something.
So I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a good series, but I certainly understand the other side that's like the East blows, the Knicks have been waiting too long, and the Spurs did this already. This is scary. They're going to do it.
Certainly worried about the rust of game one. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, let me ask you a Blazer-related question, because yes, I am able to watch a game seven not involving our team and then going,
connect it back.
How can I get us involved?
This is what we do.
One, does Trey Murphy and Portland being one of the four teams rumored for Trey Murphy
put us over the San Antonio?
Put
hump.
Us over.
Now we're talking.
The hump.
Do you need all of our draft picks to do that? Yeah, buddy. Those 18 points.
What
have
I told you?
Got a hit.
Two firsts and Shaden.
Depends on what the firsts are, because we got a bevy of them to choose from.
I give you Orlando's first, because I don't think that's going to be a good first.
Yeah, they don't seem to be pivoting, so that should be a later first-round pick.
Some people think they might dive into the Giannis stuff, trade Franz and...
Franz Wagner?
And some picks and go get Giannis, because their head coach is Sean Sweeney, who's with the Spurs. He worked in Milwaukee for a while.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I know there's reports Giannis wants to stay in the Eastern Conference. He wants to be closer to Greece, so maybe Orlando's a place.
Orlando, East.
He'd be willing to go. I wouldn't be that upset with it, because you'd still have a ton of picks to play with, and unfortunately, I think the Shaden Sharp era has come to an end in Portland, and I
certainly
think we got the blueprint of that in the playoff series when you're maybe soon to be named head coach, although who knows when we get an announcement on that, refused to play him and put guys in who literally couldn't make a shot over him. And so if that's the way we're going to treat him in the playoff series, I just tend to think his days are numbered. So if it's two firsts, one of them being Orlando's plus Shaden, to go get a guy who's a really good, young, stretch guy who's a good defender, can shoot the ball, like all of that is a positive. I have no issue with that. Does it put you over the hump? No. Does it make you more competitive? Absolutely it does. Mm. I mean, my biggest concern next year is that I don't think you're going to get a race to the bottom, and you're going to have to beat teams with a pulse throughout the course of the season in order to get to where you want to go. And so you might theoretically be a better team, but your win-loss record might not reflect that, because I think the league is just simply going to be harder next year. But I certainly acknowledge Trey Murphy is a very good player. He's not a put-you-over-the-top kind of guy, but he's a very good piece to accumulate, and you would still have the assets to theoretically go do something else and add something else.
Can I just point out one thing?
Yeah.
Without upsetting anybody, person?
I'm going to be upset.
Well, actually, I think what I'm about to say might get you upset.
Oh.
So the Spurs got Dylan Harper. They jumped in the draft lottery odds. Would you care to guess who was two games better in a bad year than San Antonio?
Yeah. Is that like the year we won 35 games when Wemby was coming out?
It was 33.
33 games, and we won four games before the All-Star break when we were supposed to be tanking because we refused to stop playing our veteran players and play our young guys because they weren't ready, even though the whole point of going through that stretch was to lose as many games as possible and tank and get the best possible draft selection. Is that what you're telling me?
I just really would like having
their
that kid.
Their three first-round picks in three straight years were Casso, Wemby, and Harper, and ours were Shaden, Scoot, and Donovan Klingon, two of whom maybe not on the team on opening night going into next season.
Yeah,
is that what you're telling
me?
Though,
year four Scoot loading.
He had a nice moment in the playoffs. It was great.
He's got abs.
And he didn't score a point in a game.
yeah, one of those games was not good.
I was thinking about it
because I remember us being right there neck and neck in the draft lottery standings for that one, and I was like, I feel like they were pretty close. So I went and looked. They won 36 and San Antonio won 34, and they got the luck to bounce from, what were they, 8, 9, whatever it was, to 2.
Yeah.
And they got Dylan
Harper.
When
you tank, you're supposed to lose as many games as possible. We did it, though, for Shaden Sharp.
Well, to be fair, they didn't.
Who's probably going to get traded this offseason. That was the one year we fully embraced the tank, and we were rewarded with the 7th pick. The other years, we won far too many games.
We also didn't want to trade that pick for OG Anunoby.
No, we did not. That's too much. It's too rich for him.
But everything's been run very smoothly here.
Everything is
great. And now Tom Dundon's going to ruin it. Damn it.
I mean, there is the...
They're the luckiest franchise in my life of any sport.
I hate
them. You can name Kansas City. You can name New England. Cleveland, I guess, because they got LeBron the first time and he was willing to say, all right, you burned my jersey, I'll come back. Golden State. I don't really care who you want to name
in any
sport.
It's San Antonio and it's not even
close. It really is the luckiest team in sports in my lifetime.
They're a small market, not a super desirable location
for
people.
They're not at all the desirable
location. San Antonio, dude.
I've been to San Antonio. It's better than Oklahoma City. It kind of sucks. Yeah. I've been there. The Riverwalk's okay. It's overpriced food on a really gross duck-crapped pond.
You remember the Alamo?
I do remember the Alamo is as tall as I am. Mm-hmm. I'm 6'1 maybe in shoes.
You could dunk on the Alamo?
Easy. Nuts in face on the Alamo. Are you kidding me?
Davy Crockett, you
get out
bitch.
Of here. Alamo. What kind of building are you?
Davy Crockett.
I mean this in no disrespectful way. It's the equivalent in 2026 of Dirt defending his house from one home intruder. Remember the Johnson? And I'm like, it's a one-story house.
Yeah, you didn't even have to go upstairs.
Hey, was that hard?
You're right there. Grab a knife. Meet him at the front door.
You just had a bigger sword. Like, good job. Your cannon was firing all cylinders.
Having a cool sword would be fun.
But seriously, take this in consideration. All jokes aside about the Alamo.
Let the hate flow through you, Dirt. Go for it.
It is the luckiest franchise of our lives. Okay, they got David Robinson. You know what? A lot of teams get a David Robinson, right?
Yeah.
He's a great player all time. Top 75 guy. Great player. Then they tank, but they don't tank as hard as Boston tanked.
No.
And what did they get out of it?
Number one overall pick.
Timmy D.
Yeah. Come on
David
down.
David Robinson had a back injury that year.
Quotations. Air quotations. He just happens to get hurt. Let's lean into the skids here. Yep. As general manager turned head coach, Greg Popovich, by the way, we forget front office guy that had to walk down there. And if they don't get Tim Duncan, he's probably getting fired.
Yes.
And I love me some Greggy P.
They ain't winning the title in 99, and they don't have the dynasty that follows.
They get Tim Duncan. Okay, cool. Well, then they get the end of the first round. Let's take this French kid. I heard he's really good, and nobody's scouting internationally the way we are. Okay. Ooh la la, Tony Parker. Sleep with my teammates. Okay? And then you get Manu Ginobili, who comes out of nowhere, a dynamic left-handed player. Again, nobody internationally scouting quite like them, so I give him the credit there.
Yep.
Then you get the Wemby ball. Then you get the Castle ball. Then you get the Harper ball. It's like every year, every version of my life, they have just, Kawhi Leonard. I didn't even mention Kawhi Leonard.
Kawhi Leonard, middle of the, was he 14th overall, 13th, somewhere in there, middle of the first round?
24-year-old winning MVP against LeBron James and the Miami Heat. Like, the luckiest franchise of my lifetime in any sport is the San Antonio Spurs.
Stole Marcus Aldridge from us in the prime of his career, ripping up the partnership of him and Dame that could have been special for years to come.
How did they do
everything about them
when they didn't get a ping pong ball and a number one pick? How did they do?
They were non-existent.
They're garbage.
They were terrible. They didn't go to the playoffs for nearly a decade.
They're down there acting like they run everything so perfectly. No, they get the best lottery luck every time that they need it, and it works out for them.
You got lucky in the luckiest draft necessary. And now you have the future face of the league for the next 20 years. So that's really exciting.
It's not even close. Luckiest franchise of my life.
Let's go, Knicks. Bing bong.
Go, Knicks.
Talk about balls on a forehead. Do that to them, New York. Make it happen.
Loaded third hour and fourth hour. Dirt and Sprague back with more on Portland Sports Leader 105.1, The Fan.